Hello and welcome to the podcast. Here we'll be combining psychology, behavioral health, and social services information with the musings of a man entering the graduate school years. My name is Andrew, and welcome to Andrew in the Gap Years Season 2.
Hello and welcome back to Andrew in the Gap Years. Today we're going to be talking about different ways that you can volunteer your time in order to get experience working in behavioral health. But before we jump into that, we've got a few announcements to make. First of all, as a reminder, we're still sponsored by Masha Ifpak and Bold Adulting. Masha Ifpak is a wonderful podcaster, speaker, and confidence coach. And if you're wondering, what is a confidence coach? Well, you can go to the second episode of my interview with Masha Ifpak. And at the end of that second episode, you can, the end of that part two, there's a 15-minute a brief confidence coaching session between herself and me where I get some confidence coaching about my podcast. And tell you what, gonna be totally honest with you guys, it helped a lot. It really did. It helped me feel a lot better about my podcast. She gave me some good advice about what I could do to grow it. Really helped me think about it from a different perspective. So really recommend you check that out. And if you're interested in getting a confidence coaching session with Masha Ifpak, if you mention Andrew or Andrew in the Gap Years in your contact email, then you can, or rather email, or you can contact her on her website. If you contact her and you mention me or the podcast, you can get 20% off your first session. That's a pretty good deal. So yeah, head over to that episode, check out what it's all about. If it seems like something you'd be interested in, go ahead and check her out. Let's see, the other big supporter of this podcast is me, myself, and also my cat, which is currently attacking my microphone. Hopefully you won't hear that. Hi, Hope. How are you doing? The other source of support for my podcast, other than my wallet, is my guide, which I made, which you can purchase for $3 off Amazon. What is the guide about exactly? Well, it's about how to choose a psychotherapist. There's a link in the description that leads to my website, and from there you can either A, purchase it off of Amazon for $3, three measly little dollars to support little me, or you can get it for free by joining my emailing list. And what happens when you get on the emailing list? Well, first you get a little thank you, and then from there, probably cat photos. There aren't a lot of people signed up right now, so I haven't sent out any major things, but I am planning on producing some more content to send out to people who are following. So highly recommend you check that out. That will be worth your time. Another thing that you will find in the description is a link to Masha Ifpak's interview of me. That's right, I was interviewed on another podcast. So you can go ahead and check that out, and if you are here coming to my podcast from hers, a big warm welcome. Do enjoy your stay. Do encourage you to leave a rating if that's something you care to do. Leave a comment, subscribe, all that good stuff, all that stuff that every podcaster hopes all their listeners will do. But either way, welcome, and I hope you enjoy the episodes that I've been producing for y'all. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the first way that you can get involved in behavioral health as a volunteer, which, by the way, not only makes you feel really good about yourself, but looks great on those resumes, folks. If you're planning to do any sort of clinical, social services, behavioral health stuff, this is the episode you want to listen to and the one you want to share with your friends. So the first thing we're going to talk about is the crisis text line. So I'm sure a lot of you already know about it, but the crisis text line, you dial 741-741, and you text the word home, go, start, help, anything along those lines, and they will connect you with a trained crisis counselor, and you exchange texts with them as opposed to it being over the phone, which obviously has its advantages. You can't always find yourself in a place where you have some quiet and privacy to contact someone when you need it, especially if, say, you live at home or you live with roommates. You may not have the opportunity to talk on a hotline with somebody out loud. So having that incognito aspect is a great benefit of a crisis text line. Now, the way it works from the volunteer end is you go through, I think it's a 1 to 2 month training where you're taught and supervised by licensed behavioral health counselors who continue to supervise you as you work. And you go ahead and you register to provide this service during certain times of the day, during the week. I believe there's a 1-year commitment to joining and volunteering for the crisis text line. So you set your schedule, and during those times, you will be at your computer responding to crisis texts from people all around the United States. I believe right now it's still just in the US. Let me double check. Yes, they're still currently just in the United States for now, but it is a great service and a great way to get experience. Not only are you getting crisis experience, but you're actually getting supervised by people who are licensed, so that's double whammy again on those resumes and those CVs. Looks very good. And the training is quite thorough, which some other volunteer options that you have may not provide quite as much training, or some of them they expect you to have some degree of training already, but Crisis Text Line trains you from the ground up, and that is fantastic. The obvious downside to Crisis Text Line, as I mentioned, is you do have to stick to a specific schedule for 1 year. I did inquire because at some point I was thinking about doing it myself. You can change your schedule, but you need to commit to having it pretty stable for, you know, a good number of months in a row. Otherwise, it's a real hassle for them because they have to find new people to fill those spaces, etc., etc. You get the idea. And sticking with the theme of ways you can volunteer from the comfort of your own home, next we're going to talk about 7cups.com, something I've actually done myself, both as a consumer and as a volunteer. I have talked about 7cups in my actually first episode ever. So if you want to go back and compare how things have been, how I was as a podcaster in my very first episode compared to now, that's a great one to check out. Try not to cringe too badly, if you can. But yeah, it's a fantastic resource. It is not a crisis resource. I just want to put that out there first. The crisis text line, crisis hotlines, suicide hotline, those are all for crises. 7cups is not intended as a crisis service. So that's one kind of immediate downside as a volunteer, is you do not get that crisis experience. But you will end up dealing with crises anyway, even though people aren't supposed to come with you to crises. But you have to refer those out to crisis hotlines and the crisis text line and offer people those resources. Now, from the consumer end, the main way that you interact with 7cups, because there's a few different options and services they offer, including therapy and whatnot, but the main one and the one that is relevant to our volunteering most is the one-on-one chats. So what you can do is you can either request a specific listener, that's what the volunteers are called on 7cups, or you can get in the general queue and the first listener who's available will take you on. And you just talk to them about whatever's on your mind, whether it be some sort of difficulties you're having, stress, depression, whatever, just need someone to talk to. I've talked to people who just wanted to chat about, were just lonely and wanted to chat about video games, and people who talked about, you know, relationship issues and various mental health conditions they had. It's really a broad range. You never know what exactly you're going to get. Some of the other things that people can do as consumers on the site is they can go to group forums, go to the group chats, which are moderated by the listeners, and there's also various other, like, self-help resources, etc. Now, from the listener, the volunteer side, 7cups is fantastic in a lot of ways. First of all, it does give you a really awesome opportunity to practice all those active listening skills. There is a brief 20-minute training, again, nowhere near as thorough as Crisis Text Line, but there is a brief training that teaches you the basics of active listening and how to convey empathy via text, which is how the site works, obviously. It's text chat rooms. The other thing that's great about it is there's tons and tons of resources for learning more. So if you log into your account, you can go to Path and go to training and certifications, and there's so many trainings. There's additional active listening trainings, trainings on 12-step, anxiety, bipolar, grief, forgiveness, test anxiety, social anxiety, weight management. It's all sorts of stuff, and you can use that information to help the people who you talk to. And you can also refer them to the self-help resources that are available on the site, which cover some of those same materials as well. Another big benefit of 7cups is that you set your own schedule, or you don't have to have a schedule. You just go on whenever you want, indicate that you're available, and you match up with people and start providing them help. You don't have to agree to any sort of yearly commitment or anything like that, or any particular dates. You just go on whenever you're ready. The exception is that they have an internship program, which you can do, where you have to do 10 hours a week for 8 weeks in addition to a whole bunch of other stuff. Something I don't recommend doing if you're a full-time student. I tried doing that and it was not something that I would recommend to anyone. I got pretty burnt out doing that. One of the big downsides of 7cups is, well, first of all, there's the training, or rather the relative lack thereof. While there's a lot of very high quality individual listeners on 7cups, there are also a lot of not very good listeners who ignore the short training. And again, since it's purely volunteer and anyone who's over 18 can join, there's not a lot of quality control. So your fellow listeners may or may not necessarily be the best source of feedback and assistance in learning more. Some of them will be, but you have to recognize that not all of them will be. The other big downside of Seven Cups is that you can't deal with crisis situations. So like I mentioned before, if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm suicidal, then you have to say, sorry, I can't chat with you. Here are the crisis text line, crisis hotline, etc. I usually give them like as many options as possible and say, sorry, I can't talk to you anymore until you've done that. And then just either ignore them or block them or whatever you need to do. But you are not trained to deal with that, so you aren't able to do that. The other really big downside of Seven Cups, which is a real shame, is that most professionals have never heard of it. I've been doing interviews for a couple years now and talking to professionals, you know, both as a consumer and as a applicant, and most people don't know in the professional realm what Seven Cups is. So that's another big problem with Seven Cups is, if you're going to put that on your resume that you did work for Seven Cups, I highly recommend you do it, but be prepared to explain what it is and maybe give a little bit more description in your resume as to what you did, because otherwise people may have no idea. Now, stepping away from your computer and into ways to volunteer that require you to leave your house, we're next going to talk about trauma intervention programs. So trauma intervention programs basically involve volunteers who will go out to the scenes of traumatic events, whether it be, say, a shooting or a robbery or whatever, and they assist people who are there and in shock and trying to deal with whatever emotional difficulties they're struggling with, whether it's someone they know is, you know, lost at the time or, you know, literally or in the terms of, you know, having died or whatever, or just, you know, they dealt with a really traumatic event and they need someone there to comfort them. So you go to them, you go drive out, you usually will assign, agree to a certain amount of time on given days of the week where you're available and on call. And then whether it's the police, firemen, other professionals will call you, or rather will call trauma-informed programs, and then they'll contact you and send you out there to go and try and get that person some comfort and some emotional caring. And it's a great way to practice your active listening, a great way to refer people to resources and get some experience doing that and help them navigate difficult situations. This isn't something I've done myself, but I know people who have, and they say that it's really rewarding and a really awesome experience. The upside, obviously, to doing TIP, trauma intervention programs, is that you get to practice talking with people in person in crisis situations, which is huge. And if you're planning to go into social work or any sort of behavioral health situation, in most of those, you will be dealing on occasion with people who are in crisis. So having that experience on your resume and just in your mind on how, okay, when there's this situation, this is how I keep control of myself, this is how I help people regulate their own emotions, that can be super duper helpful. So that's an obvious benefit. The main downside is, again, as with the crisis text line, you have to commit to a certain schedule, which is going to be pretty common for most of these ways that you can volunteer outside of Seven Cups and other online opportunities like that. All right, we got two more volunteer opportunities to go. So the next one is one that I have done myself, which I highly recommend, is volunteering for your local hospice. Yes, hospices always need people to go out and visit the people who they're taking care of. In fact, as someone who's done this myself, what I learned from their orientation is that it's actually considered an important part of the care process to have volunteers that go out and spend time with these people. It actually improves their quality of life significantly and is considered a required or at least highly recommended part of their care. So it's not just a, oh, go out and do this because, you know, we want to, you know, just so that they feel a little better about themselves. No, it's actually a very important part of care for people in hospice. Now, what I did specifically is that I did support calls, bereavement support calls. So I actually called people, the families of people who passed away under hospice care, checked in on them, figured out how they were doing, seeing if they needed additional help, referring them to other resources. That role is going to be more rare. For example, at the hospice I was volunteering at here in San Diego, they actually stopped hosting that volunteer role. I was actually the last person doing it, and they told me that once I quit that they were going to stop, and eventually I did quit because I needed to get more work hours, etc., etc. It's a whole story, but the bottom line is that that's going to be more rare. But what's more common is them needing people to go out and talk to these people who are oftentimes alone outside of their families, who are really burnt out because they're trying to care for them. So you present yourself as a kind of refreshed and, you know, or maybe not refreshed, but a fresh face and someone who can talk to them and who isn't burnt out from care and can offer new conversation topics, etc. And again, it's an awesome way to practice active listening and empathy and all that good stuff. The upside, again, is the in-person care, which is very, very valuable. As important as online services are, there is something very different about working with someone in person. You know, mainly the fact that you have a lot less time to think about what you're going to say. So what I often suggest to people is to try out something like Seven Cups first for a little bit. And once they get comfortable, maybe try something in person. But honestly, if you want to just jump right into the in-person stuff, it is a very different experience and it's very valuable. The main downside of hospice work actually isn't so much the fact that you have to have a schedule and all that you keep to, which isn't always the case. It really depends. The main difficulty is that a lot of people struggle doing hospice work just because it can be really draining. For example, when I was doing the bereavement support calls where I was calling the families of people who had just passed away recently, I was not able to do it more than a couple hours a week. And I wanted to do it more, but it just wasn't in me to, I didn't have the emotional fuel, so to speak, to keep doing it. So some people are able to do that a lot and are able to come in consistently and put in a lot of hours into that sort of work, and that's awesome. I just like to put it out there that for some people it will be more difficult. So don't be hard on yourself if you jump into hospice work and find that you can't do it, you know, even, you know, 20 hours a week or whatever. So that's all. All right, the last way to volunteer I'm going to mention, and I'm putting it for last because a lot of the people listening are not going to be able to do this option. Those of us in San Diego, and I think in a lot of other parts of California, are not able to do this as a volunteer option. Which is to volunteer for the crisis hotlines, the over-the-phone hotlines. Here in San Diego, at least, and in other parts of California, they require licensed professional counselors to fill that role. Whereas in other parts of the United States, you can be a volunteer and do it. I imagine you need to be over 18 and possibly meet some other requirements, but at the end of the day, there's no need for a license or master's degree or anything like that. I'm going to talk not so much about that here because, again, that's something where it's going to apply less to a lot of my main listeners, but the pros and cons are pretty obvious. It's basically the same as with the crisis text line, except that you need to go out to a call center and call from there. And obviously, if you have call center crisis line experience on your resume, that is going to look fantastic. So if that is an option that you have, do it. It is going to be great. It is obviously going to be crisis work, so you have to be ready for that, but it will be fantastic experience, and I highly recommend you check it out if you have that option. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Do remember to check out the interview of me on Masha Ifpak's podcast, Bold Adulting, Courage in the Face of Self-Doubt, and do check out my guide on Amazon, or you can get it for free on my website, as I discussed earlier in the episode. Go ahead and check those out. Please leave a rating and a review. I would totally be happy if you would do that, especially on iTunes. You could also do it Stitcher, also do it on Podomatic. There's a few different ways. iTunes would be the best if that's something you have the option to do, though. All right. Thanks so much. Take care.